Welcome, everyone, to our second fellowship-wide call on the topic, What is Spiritually Sustainable Earning? Hosted by the Spiritually Sustainable Earning Caucus of the Debtors Anonymous World Service Conference. And this is April 7th, 2019. While all three of our speakers today are from the United States, we do hope to expand our speaker group to other countries in the future. Our first speaker, Roger, is from Los Angeles, California, and will address the topic, Focus on Earning plus Vision Actions equals Winning Combination. Roger, we're so happy to have you here. And Jean will say 5 minutes when you have 5 minutes left and 1 minute when you have 1 minute left, and we're really looking forward to hearing your talk. So go ahead, Roger, and unmute, and you're on.
Oh, okay. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you.
Okay. Well, hi, everybody. My name is Roger. I'm a debtor. I am an under-earner. And I am a business owner in a sense. I am a business owner. I just never thought of myself as a business owner because my business is making art. And I find sometimes there's a little bit of crossover between earning and hobby. And unfortunately, I found myself in the earning, the hobby side of it with enjoyment and everything. And the hobby side of it with earning. In other words, I wasn't earning enough to make it what I would say is sustainable. And when I think about spiritually sustainable earning, I think first that it's a earning that is sustainable, in other words, that it meets your needs, and that if we go by the 12 steps, is it the steps or the traditions where we live and work with our own contribution? So earning in itself is a spiritual activity, but earning and not charging enough for it, not meeting your needs for it, is not sustainable, and I ended up debting, and I ended up getting into all kinds of trouble. So the first thing I will talk about when it comes to my actual topic is combining vision and vision path and vision earning with action steps. So this is such a relevant topic for me right now, because I would say maybe this last year I've been really focusing on earning, because I was sick for about 2 years with cancer, and I put away all my tools, and I put away all my projects because I focused strictly on my health for about 2 years, and I pretty much closed up my shop. And then I actually, I'm fine now. I got better, and I'm all, I have no cancer left. So I am back on the earning path. And it's really interesting to me, because now I have 4 or 5 years of DA under my belt. And, you know, it's like in the past, earning and doing work in my vision, because I was a painter making murals, and that was my vision, but it wasn't spiritually sustaining. It was financially sustaining, but without a foundation, without a program. It was a lot of resentment, not being of service. There was a lot of things that I would, you know, like to do differently this time around, and I have a second chance at it. And with the grace of God and this program, I feel like, you know, I can earn again, hopefully in my vision, and I'm going to talk about that. But always, always, always with the spiritual foundation now. And to me, I think that really means focusing on being of service. So when I'm earning, you know, I'm doing something for somebody. I'm making artwork for somebody, or I'm making artwork for myself that I think somebody might enjoy. Or when I painted murals, I painted commissions for people because I was painting things for them that they wanted. And there was a time in the beginning when I was offered the opportunity to paint murals in casinos. A lot of casinos were just getting started in the deserts and whatever. And I didn't want to put my energy and my effort into that as I was coming up as a mural artist. I did not want to contribute to something that I found was spiritually detrimental, I guess. And I'm not sure now, looking back on it, that that was up to me, because, you know, I think being of service is kind of like following higher power's path. And if God puts those things in my path, as long as I am working and living in integrity, and that's also part of the spiritual journey as I see it, that it's not up to me to make those calls. And I just try to live according to now these 12 steps that I've really come to cherish. So what am I, 11, 13, 6, I'm 6 minutes. So what's been going on the last maybe 5-6 months is that I with a partner from my home group, I started working on an earning pamphlet. And the pamphlet is not DA approved, but it is something that came to me through DA, and it involves working with a action partner, and you write about your vision, and you do this every day for like 3 months, and then you read it back and forth, and it was an awesome experience. I think it was like 12 weeks long, and I really worked very hard with my partner to understand my vision and to try to isolate it and try to maybe kind of focus on it. And my vision is all about earning right now. So it's like, okay, I'm using my vision. I'm taking these steps, and I'm writing about it. And as a result of this particular journey, I came to see that, one, we have lots of visions. I have lots of visions. So focusing on one vision is what was problematic for me, and making a decision to just do one meant leaving a lot of other ones aside for now. And that's what actually happened as a result of this process. I started making an action list, and the list was, I would say, like standing at the face of a cliff. I mean, it was like scary, because I was looking at actions that I had thought about taking before, actions involving getting out of vagueness, finding out, you know, actual steps I needed to take in order to pursue this vision that I came up with as a result of this this vision process. The vision that I ended up with that involved all these action steps was definitely a vision that I had. But underneath all that was another kind of earlier vision that was much simpler and basic, and something that I'd wanted to do since I was a kid, and I kind of gave up on it because I thought, well, I didn't feel like I could do it. I felt like there was a lot of competition, you know, just to make paintings and try to show them in the world and show them to people and sell them to people. And I kind of had an opportunity to do that. And with this action plan that involved all these included all these humongous tasks, so I wouldn't lose touch with my basic core, I put on my action list to just go out in the studio and paint 10 minutes every day. That was it. And in the meantime, I worked on my action steps. I made great progress. I had an action partner. I didn't want to let him down. And I even shared with my group. I really wanted to, share how my action plan led to my vision. But what's ending up happening is that 10 minutes a day of something to do that I don't lose touch with has turned out to be more of the actual vision than all of the other things I did. And I'm doing my work on my end. And I feel like part of the program, the two things about the program that have meant so much to me are the self-care and the due diligence. So due diligence means this is our part in what we do with our higher power's calling. And that just because we have a higher power and a connection with them, we have our footwork to do here on this earthly planet. I came to a place where I'm willing to do my part, and that's only as a result of being in DA, hearing everybody's journey and how they do their part, they don't do their part, but when they do their part, usually things start to manifest. And that's what I am. You know, for me, it was all about the promises. And I don't do very much just for the money, although I like to pay my bills now and I like to not debt, and I care about money more than I used to. But now I want to contribute enough to my own well-being that I can do this vision, and I'm also going to teach a little bit, which won't bring in a lot of money, but it will help. And so I will work with my DA fellowship and my DA PRG team and my action buddies, and I'll have this. I mean, I will do these things. I will teach part-time, and I will make enough money to go out in the studio and paint, and now I paint more than 10 minutes a day, and that's okay because I really decided to make that a calling and a stream of income. And so I'm very grateful. You know, I would never have dreamed that as a result of taking my numbers that I would be going out in the studio and painting, and that would be my job, and that would be my action list thing to do. You know, it's just mind-boggling to me. So I can wrap up and say I'm grateful to share this. I'm grateful to be on this caucus. And in the beginning, I had vision and earning, spiritually sustainable earning, kind of mixed up in my head. And now I don't believe that spiritually sustainable earning is necessarily has to be in your vision, that it could be anything you're doing. If you are approaching it using the steps and being of service. And so I say enjoy that and that aspect of the program. It's meant a lot to me, and thank you, everybody, for listening.
Thank you, Roger, for sharing with us. Thank you so much for that talk. Okay, our second speaker, Anne, is from Los Angeles, California, USA, and Anne will address the topic, Progress Not Perfection. And we're so happy to have you here. And Jean will say 5 minutes when you have 5 minutes left and 1 minute when you have 1 minute left. And we're really looking forward to hearing your talk. And you can unmute now and go ahead and start. Thank you, Anne.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And thank you to the previous speaker. And I think this is a wonderful, first of all, wonderful title to the program. Spiritually sustainable earning. I have to say, when I heard that, I thought this is going to be some kind of a thing where there's going to be a solar panel roof powered by wind that powers my electric car, and somehow my higher power is in charge and I make money. No, that's what's spiritual. But I love this notion of being spiritually sustainable earning, and I have found that the antidote for me in terms of my debt is obviously earning and increasing earning and all that. I did want to come back to, you know, I work with words to earn my spiritually sustainable income. And I just wanted to say that in terms of progress, not perfection, it was pointed out to me that the only step we need to work perfectly is step one, which is we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. In our program, of course, we substitute that word for debt. And I find it very helpful to almost take this and put it into the self. And I say, I am powerless over debt and under-earning, and my life is unmanageable. And if I remember that that's why I'm in a program, that's why I'm here, it really does help me keep my focus. And the biggest gift for me in this program is clarity. Things like, what did I spend today? What am I earning? What bill is due? When am I paying it? How do I feel about being paid less than the person I work with that does the same thing? Can I ask for what I want? How do I ask for what I want? These are the questions I say in my head, and I find it wonderful to ask my sponsor or an action partner or to take it to what we call pressure relief groups if you are new to this program and you're just listening to this. A lot of people talk about progress, not perfection. It's a slogan we use in our program. When I first heard it, I thought it was something that you would say to someone who did something like cleaned part of their bathroom and then just left the tub and the floor to be cleaned by someone else. I thought that's a slogan for people that half-ass it. And since I'm no stranger to avoiding difficult things, I thought it was meant to make me feel better. But one of the places that it actually appears in our literature is in the 12 and 12. And it's really progress, not perfection, applies to inventories. And I'm just going to read a little bit because I think it pertains to this topic. I'm going to skip around, but this is all found in something called the 12 and 12. And we say, although all inventories are alike in principle, the time factor does not distinguish one from another. There's the spot check inventory taken at any time of the day whenever we find ourselves getting tangled up. There's the one we take at the day's end when we review the happenings of the hours just passed. Here we cast a balance sheet, crediting with things well done and chalking up debts where due. Then I skip over to this paragraph, which is the last paragraph. In all these situations, we need self-restraint, honest analysis of what is involved, a willingness to administer when the fault is ours, and an equal willingness to forgive when the fault is elsewhere. We need not be discouraged when we fall into the error of our old ways, for these disciplines are not easy. We shall look for progress, not perfection. Now, what the hell does that have to do with earning and debting? Well, let me tell you. I find that when we talk about inventory, basically in our program we take an inventory every day of what we spend and what we earn. And this is crucial to my recovery. And unlike other programs that involve substances or behaviors, for me the antidote to debting is earning. And in my case, I've been a member. This is a little bit about my, I'm going to jump around a little bit about my background. I've been in BDA, DA since 1990. I was raised in a family in the 70s where, my parents' marriage was falling apart, so they gave me a checking account to buy my own clothes. Not very much money, but I was given money for a winter coat one time, and I spent that money on taking my friends out for Chinese food. And you're probably saying, well, what does that have to do with anything? But I would say that that is a perfect example of this notion that it's low self-esteem combined with a large ego. The other factor for me is please like me, praise me, don't be angry with me, followed by don't look at me. And this also applies to things like asking for more money at a job, which I'll talk about in a second, which is I want someone to rescue me. I want someone to like me. Please don't look at me. And it's sort of like vagueness followed by a large overcoat of shame. And that to me is the core of my disease and the thing that earning my worth helps alleviate, really getting clear on what do I want to do? What do I need to earn? How am I going to get there? How can I do this with my higher power's help? So fast forward, as a child, as I said, I would bounce checks. I was a 13-year-old with a checking account. I did not come from an incredibly wealthy family, so they were small checks, but this habit started. And I started to go to a job where my friend saw me go to the supervisor and say, hey, I know you give out checks early. Can I have my check early this week? And she said, I think you need to go to something called Debtors Anonymous. And I went, and I just took to it like a fish in water. I was off to the races. I found a great sponsor. I started writing my money down. And she was a saleswoman, and she said, well, what do you earn? And I think I was earning at that point $500 a week. And I said, well, I do this, 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 and this. And she said, well, you need to be earning at least twice that much. I said, well, how am I going to do that? Well, with the help of my sponsor, I wrote down everything I did. And this is, by the way, still something that I give sponsees. What do you do in your job? Write it down. Go to your bosses. This is what I do. This is what I need to make. And you start with a number, and then you let God take over the rest. So she gave me this action, and by the end of the day, my boss basically doubled my salary. And I went from making $500 to $1,000 with the help of my higher power. So I was doing very well in program. Now here comes the progress, not perfection part. At about 7 years, I had a job out of town. I lost touch with my trusted program people, and stupidly had not caught up my Citibank card, and I found myself putting my rent on my Citibank card. This led to a disaster. I think my higher power thought, well, if that's how we're going to play, well, why don't you figure it out on your own? And one thing led to another, and I found myself crawling back to program. And it was actually a great thing that happened, because it showed me really humbly, and I have many people that say this, it's sort of like you arrive in the program with the exact amount of debt. By then I had gone from having zero debt after 2 or 3 years in program to then increasing my debt for putting on Citibank to another $3,000 that I needed to take down. But it doesn't matter if you're listening to this tape recording and you are thinking, oh my God, there's no way I could raise my hand and say, I have $250,000 worth of debt. Take that pressure off of yourself. It's really not about the zeros, and you will be surprised how quickly your debt will be alleviated just by showing up and taking action. So another example of the miracle abound is that fast forwarding, you know, now I own my own house. It's not paid for. Obviously, I'm still making mortgage payments. I have a job now in my vision. Sustainably, I used to be the person that looked at the glass at all the people making donuts. Now I'm inside with the regular, with the donut makers making the donuts I wanted to make when I first started out in the career that I'm in. So I was working at a job with this person for over 5 years, and I realized that this person had sort of a booming, loud voice and very good at advocating for himself, had a title, and I assumed the salary that I thought maybe I should have too, since we did the exact same thing. So talk about, DA, with the help of my sponsor, I made the case for why I thought I should probably have equal pay and equal title with this, with my coworker. And I got rejected. The person in charge said, no, we are not going to do that. And, you know, like a negotiation, I said, okay, well, I think that probably means I need to look elsewhere. So I was willing to walk away. And then what I didn't realize was that that person needed the okay from the vice president of this multi-million dollar company to say no. Anyway, the end result was that the vice president said, give her what she wants, and I got what I wanted. So once again,
5 minutes.
With the help of my sponsor, I was able to negotiate my salary and get paid what I think was probably the right thing. But having said that, I also need to realize I have to trust what my higher power has in store. Now, here's where the inventory comes into play. Even though we had the same title now and the same pay, the way they set up our offices, and this is without telling you what I do for a living, we talk rather loudly, especially my coworker. He got his own office. I usually have my own office. But for whatever reason, it was like, we're going to give you your raise, but you're going to have to share an office. So I had needed to advocate for my own office. And I thought, I was so mad. I thought, here we go again. And I was helped by people and I just kept at it and waited. But, remembering that in all these situations, again, this is from the 12 and 12, we need self-restraint, honest analysis of what is involved. And the honest situation was that I need my own office, and I was just told, just wait. A willingness to admit when the fault is ours, and an equal willingness to forgive when the fault is elsewhere. We need not be discouraged when we fall into the error of our old ways. For these disciplines are not easy. And what I realized was I'm going to ask and then I've got to let it go. And that's really what spiritually sustainable earning for me is about, which is take the action, any action. Take the action with a fellow. Raise your hand in a meeting. Share. Write on a step. Do anything towards your recovery. And let your higher power take the rest. I don't know about you, but I come to the meetings to grow my life. I will not die as a debtor. If something happens, I have a medical bill or something I can't pay, God's in charge. I'm going to do the best that I can. But it's not just about not debting one day at a time for me. It's about earning. Earning and growing into the life and the vision that is meant for you, that comes from your heart, that combines with your higher power's will for you in your life, and to grow your life in beautiful and recovered ways. And that, to me, is how I work my program and what I believe. So thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Anne. Thank you so much for sharing with us. Thank you very much. And our third speaker now is Sharon from Tucson, Arizona. And Sharon will work with the topic of Higher Power as My Employer. Sharon, we're so happy to have you here, and Jean will say 5 minutes when you have 5 minutes left and 1 minute when you have 1 minute left, and we're really looking forward to hearing your talk.
Thank you, Paul.
Hi, Sharon.
Hi, Paul. Hi, everybody. Thank you so much for this call and for the Spiritually Sustainable Earning Caucus. And my name is Sharon. I'm a compulsive debtor. And I have the honor and the privilege of being the General Service Board liaison. And I have been for like about a year and a half to the Spiritually Sustainable Earning Caucus. And I was lucky enough to come in on the very first day. And there were 22 people in the room. There weren't even enough seats. It was a new caucus in 2017. And it was so very exciting. So for anyone who doesn't know, and I think, you know, you've probably heard it before, or maybe you haven't, so I thought what I would do is read the Spiritually Sustainable Earning Caucus mission statement, which has been revised this year, and it is as follows. The Spiritually Sustainable Earning Caucus serves to support the DA Fellowship in gaining clarity around issues of earning in the DA program. Our vision is to broaden the fellowship-wide understanding of how spiritually sustainable earning fits into DA recovery, encouraging a comprehensive and spiritual approach by working the 12 steps and using the tools of Debtors Anonymous. So, and that's the new Spiritually Sustainable Earning mission statement. And it's really interesting because this caucus was developed out of an interest, specifically more so than spiritually sustainable earning, more so in under-earning. And I love this definition, though, because it encompasses everyone in recovery in DA. Obviously, the primary purpose of Debtors Anonymous is to not incur new unsecured debt. So how do we, as debtors in recovery, earn and be self-supporting through our own contributions, but do so in a spiritually sustainable way? So I would say that this applies to anyone and everyone that is in Debtors Anonymous. So I know for me, you know, and part of what I think we need to also think about is how do we balance our need to support ourselves with wanting to do work and be of service to our higher power and the greater good. And I know for me, I started out really young working. I come from a large family. We didn't have a lot of money growing up. And it sounds like someone might be unmuted. I'm not sure if they are or not, but it sounds like someone might be. Okay. And we never got an allowance. And I was a debtor right from the get-go. I always looked around, saw what other people had, felt like I had less. And in some instances, I did have less sometimes. But I always wanted more. I never felt like I had enough. You know, no matter whether it was a holiday or a birthday, I always wanted more. So what was interesting is my mother, because I'm the oldest of seven kids, my mother started, like, volunteering me to be babysitters for other families. And I really didn't want to do that. The last thing that I wanted to do as the oldest of seven kids was watch someone else's, like, kids. You know, I felt like, oh, my life is so chaotic. You know, when can I get some peace and quiet? And why would I want to do that? But what I soon realized is that that was a good way to make money. And because we didn't get an allowance, I realized that if I was going to be feeling like I didn't have enough, that would be a really good way. And I started doing this at like age 10, I think. Like, I guess that's not really that young, but getting paid for it at that point. And what was really interesting is that I didn't like it. I really did not like it. And my mother and father would both say to me, you know, it's a J-O-B. It's not F-U-N. You know, your job does not have to be fun. So I got that concept really young, you know, like I ended up thinking that I had no right or I shouldn't have any expectation that having any kind of work should be fun. And what was really rewarded in my family was you know, I remember my mother saying to me, are you working today? Are you working tomorrow? And it was like, not, you know, what are you doing to enjoy yourself today? It was like, are you working? Are you, you know, are you being, you know, are you earning? Are you working? So, and what ended up happening with me is that I ended up really enjoying money, as I said. So I realized that not only would it provide me with what I wanted when I had a little bit of money coming my way, it also provided me to have control and domain over my, like, brothers and sisters, because I could dole out money for as favors or to get what I wanted. So I knew right away when I went to school that I wanted to make money, and I did that. So I come to DA kind of like upside down. I knew that I wanted to make money, and the career that I picked, there was no real guarantee that that would happen, but it did happen for me. And I think it actually happened as a result of my spiritual sickness, because I became so obsessed with money and, you know, status and prestige and, you know, self-centered and self-absorbed in the extreme and not relying on a higher power at all. And I did make a lot of money, but what I ended up doing was trying to fill this spiritual hole, because I wasn't doing something that I loved. I was doing something that, and actually when I got my first job, I had planned on doing something within my career totally different. And the person, one of the people at the place where I worked, and I've always only been an employee. I've never been a business owner, self-employed. I've always worked for other people. And that really fed very well into my people-pleasing, but that's another program. But it really worked for me because it just fed on itself like a horrible, you know, thing. And I just wanted to please other people. And I also liked the money. I liked the money. And, you know, I ended up being on the other end probably of overworking rather than underworking or under-earning. But it just was not spiritually sustainable at all. So what happened with me, and I can see looking back when I've done my inventories in the past and written about my history of compulsive debting and in other fellowships as well, it's amazing to me. I came into DA pretty late in my early 50s, and it's amazing to me to see how much is tied up in DA. I mean, they say all roads lead back to Al-Anon, but I really think all roads should lead to DA, and it's the best kept secret in 12-step recovery, in my humble opinion. But in any event, I just see myself just as a basis of having a very, very unsustainably spiritual career and employment path, that it really contributed to my compulsive spending and acquiring and wanting and desiring of everything that I didn't have. So once I realized that this was an issue, the debting part of it, I didn't for a really, really long time. I ended up getting, it's very interesting that chronic illness has been mentioned earlier, and I developed a chronic illness, so it slowed me down, and I never would have slowed down. I just like went, and I was crazy. I didn't even realize it at all. I thought I was successful, successful and prosperous and abundant, but you know, when I look back at what I was, I can see now that none of it was true, and it was this whole house of cards that gratefully fell, as a result of me having to slow down from a chronic illness. And I've had cancer, I've had other things, and, you know, I've had these bumps in the road, but thank God my higher power put them in my path. And I've heard, you know, people say once in a while, why did this happen to me? Now I look at it as, why did this happen for me? Because but for my chronic illness, I never would have slowed down. I would have still been, you know, wanting and acquiring. I know it. I know it's true. But in any event, I did have to slow down. But unfortunately, what happened for me is that my spending didn't slow down. And I made less money, still really good money, but I still spent more than I made. And obviously that's not going to be sustainable spiritually or otherwise over the long run. And Jean, I haven't heard a time warning. Is it, did you give me a 5 minute yet? Or not
no,
yet?
No,
you've
got 12 seconds to five.
All right. I thought I was getting close.
You are.
Thank you so much. Okay, thanks. Anyway, because I do want to focus on the solution because there's so much disease, but also so much solution that I would love to share with everybody. So the bottom line is I crashed and burned in my quest to be, you know, powerful and successful, and it's not the answer, and rich and wealthy and all of the above, and none of them matter. And I didn't realize that. And when I first came into DA, I would not have believed anyone that told me it's not about the money. And that was about 11 years ago. And I just thought, all right, I just have to, like, straighten out a few little quirks here and I can get back into spending the way that I want to spend and get everything that I want to get. So having said that, I had a really hard time saying I was even a debtor because I didn't have debt at the time. Higher power took care of that for me after I spent the considerable amount of money that I had saved after my successful working career of about 25 or 30 years. I ended up going back out, using credit cards again, and getting some debt, getting $75,000 worth of debt. I came back on my knees after a year of a blackout spend and was just like, please, God, I was really suicidal. And I said, please, God, I'm willing to go to any length for my recovery. And I had never been willing to do that. So once I righted the ship by stopping debting, first of all, and I got a little bit of recovery, I was able to start carrying the message of how DA saved my life and share my experience, strength, and hope with other people who had the same problems of debting that I had. And so I've really focused on, well, five steps, but really three main steps. I'll do them in order and then go backwards. pretty much steps 3, 7, 10, 11, and 12, I work them every day, you know, and step 1, of course, because I always forget I'm a debtor. I really don't want to believe it, but I know I am. But I'll start with step 12, and, you know, step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry the message to compulsive debtors and to practice these principles in all our affairs. And so that's really where the higher power part comes in. So in our 12-12, and I really hope that our 12-12-12 is quoted just like the AA Big Book is. So on page 57 of our DA 12-12-12, step 12, it says, we lived in fear of scarcity and deprivation as a result of our debting. Now we have a new view of and gratitude for our own prosperity and abundance. We thought our prosperity meant having lots of money and belongings. We now know that no matter our circumstances, prosperity is the experience of thriving with what we have today. And that, to me, summarizes everything that I think about higher power. Because if you told me 11 years ago that I would be able to be not only thriving with the money that I make today and the money that I have available, the resources that higher power has provided me with today, I would say you have got to be kidding me. But not only am I am happier than I've ever been. And I realize that, you know, I realize for the first time it's not about the money. And I have everything that I need to meet all of my needs and even some of my wants. Now, I'm not going to say all of my wants, but I've pulled back because I've got, I think, you know, I want to say this humbly, that I do have a small amount of recovery. I don't want as much. I really don't. So that's one thing. So I really think that it all is about service. Service really is the secret. And it also applies to earning. So I'll work backwards from step 12. And then step three, I have to ask every day. I have to ask God for help, you know, and I never really believed that. You know, I always thought, no, I've got to do it myself. I never really trusted in a higher power. And if you don't believe in God, a higher purpose, whatever it is, just not me. And I always relied on myself. And the other step, my favorite step of all, is step 7, humbly ask him to remove my shortcomings. And I'll quote on page 32 of the DA 12, 12, and 12. What was required for this step was humility. Words identified with humility include modesty and unpretentiousness, while among its opposites are pride and self-importance. However, many in recovery have found that the best definition of humility is teachability. We let go of having all the answers, of always thinking and sometimes insisting that we were right and others wrong. Defined as teachability. Is that time?
Yes.
Time, Sharon.
All right. Well, anyway, I'm really, really grateful. Higher power is what it's all about, and I will pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Sharon. Thanks for sharing with us. And thank you to all three of our speakers today. And I will now end the recording. Give me just a second here, and I'm going to, okay, so...